Do you remember what it was like back in 2007, 2008, before social media really took off and the term influencer was a common thing that people just understood? Well, my guest today does, Andre Kay. He was the founder of the very first Black-owned social media agency and one of the first ever back in 2008 called Socially Buzz. And Andre has a really interesting journey and how he's built up this business that focuses on helping franchisees, franchisors, market their businesses through social media. What's really exciting is that Andre's kind of been on the forefront of these different technology movements when we moved into social media back in the early in 2008 area. And now starting to focus on opening the very first, one of the very first Web3 media agencies and how he's taking what he's learning about metaverse, NFTs, cryptocurrency, and tokens and applying that to companies, franchises, entrepreneurs so that they can grow, scale, market their companies. So it's really interesting conversation that we have about his own journey of how he started Socially Buzz, which is very unique and kind of just interesting how his progression throughout life has been, as well as what he's focused on in the future and how he sees the future of social media and being a marketing agency evolving. So without further ado, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Silicon Alley Podcast featuring the Andre Kay. Are you interested in growing and scaling your business? Welcome to the Silicon Alley Podcast, where you'll hear from entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and top performers on what it truly takes to grow and scale a business. You'll walk away with actionable insights you can apply in your own business and life. Now to William Glass, the CEO and co-founder of Ostrich, and your host of the Silicon Alley Podcast. Andre, welcome to the Silicon Alley Podcast. Excited to have you on today.
William, it's a pleasure, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited to dive in. You have a lot of expertise in social media marketing. You've been doing this for a while now, for 14 plus years, right, at this point? So you've got a great area of expertise, and you're also doing some things that I think that are new that I'm really excited to dive into and get your take on some of the changes that are happening in this new Web3 world that people are talking about. So excited to dive into that as well.
Exactly. There's so much going on. Yeah, we were actually one of the first social media agency to exist in the world, right? So yes, they had advertising agency, but they didn't do social media. Yes, they had graphic design and content, but they didn't do social media. We were one of the first agency that was created specifically to do social media.
So talk to me about that. Well, why don't we start at the beginning, a little bit about, you know, who you are for background and context. And then if that leads into how you ended up being the first agency, social agency, one of the first ones out there. But yeah, we'd love a little context.
No, of course. So originally from Jamaica, born and raised, moved over here with mom and everything. But eventually, I think I've always had this thing for entrepreneurship, right? At that time in my life, I didn't know it. When you kind of sit back 10, 20 years after, you'll be like, hold on, I was doing this and that, right? So even at early on, before when 2000, when internet just came out, I was trying to figure out how to create an e-commerce brand, right? It wasn't called really an e-commerce thing, but how do I sell things online, right? So my big start came when I developed an outdoor marketing company, right? And what we did is that we do all the digital marketing, all the outdoor marketing for businesses locally in the South Florida area. And for me, it was, how do we get to that next level in growing the company? And we thought about, okay, what's new in tech? And this is where I developed a company called Text to Party. And the idea behind Text to Party was, when you want to go out and party at night, instead of getting flyers, you would text a number, party 305, party 954, and would give you all the hottest clubs, access to bottles, access to exclusive inside the club. And then from there, I was also working at a bank, right? I was working at a bank, started as a part-time teller, and eventually became the assistant vice president of the bank, right? And while I was running the bank, running this startup, I had to choose one. And the bank was paying the bills. So I chose the bank and let go of the startup. But eventually, circumstances have it, I had to leave the bank. And once I left the bank, I had to start like, oh, wow, I don't have a job. What do I do now, right? And for the next 6 to 9 months, I was just there looking for a job. And then this thing called social media decided to happen, right? Spent a lot of time online. Facebook came around and all these social media platforms started popping up, and I started using it for myself. And I was getting traction on the Facebook business page that came out. And eventually people would reach out to us and was like, hey, can you grow our fan page for us? I'm like, okay, we could do that. So they started paying us to do it. And being in the nightlife industry, we started this company called Socially Buzz, right? My wife, which was my girlfriend at that time, we were like, look, all the nightclubs we used to work with, all the businesses we used to work with before, let's reach out to them and say, hey, can we manage your social media for you? And they were all new to this thing called social media. And they were like, sure, if it's going to help me bring more patrons into the club, then of course. And that was it. And that was the start of Socially Buzz. And from there, we took Socially Buzz from nothing, zero, no existence. And it was fine about a niche. It's about how do we find our niche inside that industry? And somebody randomly messaged me on LinkedIn. I was like, Andre, we want to invite you to a franchise show in Miami. I'm like, franchise show, an expo? Never been to one. So we decided to go. My wife and I, we pull up in the parking lot. We drank two energy drink, and we went to the expo, and it was like 10 rows of booths. And so it was like about 200 booths. We spoke to every single booth inside the expo. And the story I'm sharing here is this. The last booth we spoke to, and I'm talking about, this was like 9 years ago, 10 years ago. The last booth we spoke to was a client we currently have now since then. So if we stopped at booth 9, if we stopped at row 10, if we stopped in the last booth at the top, would have never met that client. And I always like to share this because it really sums up the resilience of you don't stop, right? You always give it 100%. And from there, we figure out our niche will be franchises. And that's how we took Socially Buzz to, well, from where it is to where it is now.
Got it. No, I love that. Yeah, I love that story of resilience and finding your niche too, right? Like, it's really interesting starting off with, you know, nightlife clubs, something that you had experience with previously, and then ultimately, you know, finding that with franchise businesses, which obviously are different. And I guess, could you just quickly, maybe a couple points on like how marketing for a franchise business is different, given that you're a part of this larger, you know, entity? There's probably rules and regs on what you can do in terms of your brand. So how do you get people to come to your Subway if you own that Subway, or, you know, whatever the franchise is? I think that's a really interesting, you know, unique situation that not everyone faces. Yeah.
And absolutely. So once again, so with franchises, that was the goal of Socially Buzz. When we figured that we could market to franchises, we didn't want to go to the corporate franchises yet. We wanted to go to the franchise that was on 5th and Lennox, right? On the corner of the street. And we went to them and say, hey, we want to help you market locally, right? Because back then, when a Domino's Pizza or a Jamba Juice or whatever the case may be used to market, they market from a corporate level. They weren't marketing individually in specific cities and communities. So we came in and we did that. And our first big client was Domino's Pizza. It was 45 location, Domino's Pizza location. And to tell you how early this was, the guy that ran the 45 Domino's Pizza location in North Carolina saw Socially Buzz, reached out to us. We started talking. It was like, I want to believe this thing is real. For me to believe it's real, can you meet me in North Carolina to close the deal? So I literally flew to North Carolina. We met in the airport. Okay, this is real, this is good. Shake hands, and I flew back. And we signed the deal. So with front, and so to answer that question, so there's two levels to franchises, right? So you know the franchisor and then the franchisee. When you work with a franchisee, they do have to follow certain rules when it comes to marketing. You have to do this, you have to follow branding and so on and so on. So we were able to integrate whatever the rules were into those localized marketings to make sure we weren't stepping on the toes of the franchisor. But now when we're also marketing for franchisor, we're now able to push that same strategy of what needs to get pushed to individual location. Because what we understand was, if you have 100 locations, if you have 1,000 locations across the nation, one community is going to be different from the other community. So you have to tailor that marketing based on those specific communities and who you want to engage with.
Got it. Yeah, it's hyper localized, right? You're localizing, you've got the larger brand story, and then it's how do I localize it for this market, this in a different neighborhood demographic than the next one over.
Exactly. And even go as far as this, even now in today's day, where we might look and say, okay, is your franchise near a highway? Or if they're are they in the suburbs, where are they located? If they're near a highway, okay, let's test these types of platforms for your marketing versus something as if you're in a more of a community base, you might want to spend some time in Nextdoor, right? But if you're by a highway and you got a lot of traffic going by, let's test something like a Waze that people are looking for. Get what I'm saying? So it's really strategize how we break down those.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? Yeah, if you've got more of that commuter traffic, it's not people that are going to be there versus it's very community
Exactly.
focused because all of your business is going to come from community. So being very focused on here's actually what this location, here's the customer segment that makes the most sense. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Exactly.
So, okay, so you've figured out your niche, you're in franchises, you've got you figured it out. Like, talk to me about the next stages of the business. What happens after you've started to figure out that this is really where your bread and butter is going to be?
A great question. So it was like, how do I get expose myself to more franchises? More franchises. So I did something then that we're reincorporating now, right? So one things I did was I wrote one article every week for 3 years straight, giving knowledge and value and expertise on social media, on marketing, and everything that to do with that. And that cemented us in Google, right? At that point, before Google changed of algorithms. But it was anytime you search for social media services for franchises, for nightclub, for restaurants, we would always be number one, right? So we had a lot of business coming that way. And that's how we're starting to scale the agency part of the business. And the person I am, I'm a very entrepreneurial, right? And I'm really big into technology. So for us, it was like, what's the next level of Socially Buzz? And we want to automate the process, right? This was a little bit before the Hootsuite and the Sprout Social of the world, where we created a reputation management software, right?
Ah, nice.
Where and this wasn't focused on the big platform, it was focused on the reputation, the Yelp, the Googles, the TripAdvisors. But once again, those platforms weren't allowing your API to be pushed out to external platforms as yet. So we had to do it a little manual with a little bit of, with a little bit of API research on that. But I spent so much money in developing this app, right? But I learned very quickly that we were burning through so much cash developing the software, developing the app, having a team on board, that we decided, and we were losing money on our agency because we're investing everything in the software part of the business. And so for me, I was like, I can't compete with Facebook, right? And at this point, this is when Facebook started integrating all these new technologies where you could schedule your own things, you could do a lot more things on the platform. Like, hold on, am I going to keep investing and drain our bank account trying to incorporate these things, or do we put it aside, reinvest back into the agency and continue to grow that way and then utilize other tools to do what we need to do? And that's exactly what we did. So
Yeah.
even though it was tons of dollars, tons of money, we had to kill that.
Yeah. No, that's a
Yeah.
tough situation to be in. What did you learn from that experience, Andre, having to, building this thing that you're really excited about and then realizing it's not going to work and having to cut the cord?
It's okay to let go. But it was important for us to understand because some people or some startups or some an entrepreneur, they would ride the wheels until it fall off, right? And which is fine. And then they left with nothing. For me, it was like I had to do what was best for my clients, for my team members, for myself, and for my family, right? I was like, okay, how far do we go before we say this is not going to work, right? The app is still amazing to this day, right? And if we want to probably bring back up, we could, but I'm not about reinventing the wheel. So there's technologies out there that do exactly what we want to do. So we invest in those technologies. But at that point in time, it was tough. I'm not going to say, hey, my God, it was an easy decision. I buy an app, that's it. It was tough. It was truly tough. It was days crying in the shower, the days type of thing. Like, invested so much money, so much resources, so much time in developing this thing that was amazing and it was good. But for me to compete, it was tough.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, you got to a point where just it doesn't make sense even though I really want it to work. It's
Yeah.
not working, and I've got to face the music that maybe there's other things and I can refocus on the core part of the business that has been working.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting. So just out of curiosity, how large is the agency today, Andre?
So at this point, we're about 18, 20 people.
Okay.
Which we truly try to keep it a boutique agency, because we don't want to take on every single business that's come to us, right? Yeah, we were larger before, but we were taking on clients that would pay us $500, $1,000, and we were just all cookie cutter stuff, right? And we couldn't build from that, right? For us, we want to invest a lot of time, a lot of resources, and a lot of our expertise into our clients. So once we start scaling up, we increased our price, we decreased our client base. So now we're investing a lot more into our clients. So when a client come on to us, and the way the team is built out is when a client comes to us, they're gonna get an account manager, they're gonna get an executive, they're gonna get an email manager, an ad manager. So they have a team of people that's supporting them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That makes sense, Andre. And it's one of those things, right? Because with an agency to grow, you either have to add more headcount or you've got to increase price. Like, there's not really any options because it's often, obviously, there's now technologies that make it so that you can scale and service like at a quality level better, but it's still at some point, it's still very much a service-based business. So I
Exactly.
was curious. I think it's really helpful context and, ebbing and flowing from higher headcount to lower headcount, and finding that right size is important.
Exactly. And even at that point, you have to be truthful to yourself, and you have to be able to say no, right? At times. And that's how you're going to
Absolutely.
grow. That's how you're going to truly grow, when you're able to confidently say no with no regrets, right? Someone comes to you, hey, can you help us market our business? I'm crying, but I only have X dollars to do it. I can't help you. That's not who we are right now, right? I could recommend you to someone, and when you get to that level, then we could help you to scale, but we can't do it, right? So I've turned on a lot of clients that way, not because they didn't have an amazing business, but they didn't fit our culture, or they didn't fit where we are now to truly help them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense, Andre. How did you get to the point where you were confident in that, right? Because the idea of firing clients, right? That's very scary. Customers, right? That's very scary to a lot of folks, especially if you're just starting out.
I think it comes from experience, right? I think it's come from being in business for a while, doing it over and over. I remember even when I was even when firing an employee or an employee might leave, I would kick myself for a week. What did I do wrong? What could I have done better? Where it got to a point where no. Once I, as long as I give this thing, this person, this client, this situation, 1,000%, I'm whatever happens after that, I'm okay with that, right? So learning through those different scenarios and those different situations helped me to get better at saying no, right? It hurts sometimes because you're gonna say to yourself, wow, I could have made X amount of dollars from those five clients I just told no to. But then when you realize that, oh, okay, I said no to those five clients, it would have probably take up three times the amount of energy and time from my team to one client that takes up way less time, but we're executing and we're delivering a lot better on. That's where we were able to say this is the best decision. And then when it happens multiple times, it became a lot more confident in doing it over time. So it wasn't like, oh, one day, you know what? I'm going cold turkey. No one. Because then you're going to lose business for the next 6 months and be like, ah, what am I doing? Am I doing something wrong? So it takes time.
Absolutely. No, that makes sense. That makes sense, Andre. So talk to me about like the current move, right? Because we were talking before we hit record, that you've made this sort of pivot, right, in terms of another capability that Socially Buzz is now able to tackle, which is in the Web3 space, combining metaverse, blockchain, NFTs. Can you talk to me about that decision? And then we might want to try to break down some of these topics for folks that may not be as familiar with the Web3 jargon.
No, of course. So if you haven't learned anything from me already through this entire conversation, I'm always forward thinking, right? I'm always want to be on the forefront of what's next and how we can utilize what's next to help propel our business, help propel our culture or our clients and our team. And for us, it was like, what is that next thing? Right? where can we invest our time and our resources to get to that next thing? And it was the metaverse. It was Web3. But to understand that, we didn't just say, you know what, we're going to jump on the bandwagon and try to do this metaverse thing, right? We actually invested, we researched, we spent a lot of time understanding to the core of what not just the metaverse in general is going to be in the next 5 years, 3 years, 10 years, but what we're going to, what as a community, as a nation, where we're going to be in the next 20 years, right? And let me ask you this, William, do you believe in the next 20 years, we're going to have superhumans?
In the next 20 years, superhumans?
Yeah. And I could break it down what I mean by that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I think maybe define that.
Okay. So superhumans, right? It's this. So you know, you ever heard of CRISPR, which is the nanotechnology right? So we can take something that could alter your DNA, right? That's on one side, right? That could alter your DNA. If you say, you know what, I want as a kid that's faster, that's stronger, that's taller, that's smarter, and you created this human, and then you take a technology like Elon Musk's Neuralink and embed that in their brain with unlimited information, now we're talking about superhumans, right? We're talking about someone with information at their fingertip that's faster, stronger, smarter than the average human. So I say all of that to say we're looking that far, right? But the metaverse, Web3, AI, blockchain is going to propel us to that way, right? So we want to start, once again, let's go back to being in this industry for so long, doing this thing for so long, I knew all the rules. So now when we started Metai Block, which is metaverse, artificial intelligence, and blockchain coming together, emerging together, this is where we got Metai Block. And this is where we decide on what part of this metaverse, this Web3, do we want to focus on? There's going to be just like the internet, right? When the internet came about, it was, you want to do websites? You want to do e-commerce? You want to be a hosting company? What do you want to be in this entire thing, right, of the internet? Same thing with Web3 and the metaverse. Where do you fit yourself in, right? And I think a lot of people are going to start defining that. For us, it's what we knew and what we understood was the metaverse. We understand agency life. But how do we take that up a notch? So, and we all also understood niches. So now we launched Metai Block, will help in franchises bring their brand into the metaverse.
Got it.
Right?
Now, yeah, no, that makes sense. It's interesting. I guess why are you such a big believer that this is like, you know, and I get that the superhuman, I'm assuming it has to do with the superhumans, yeah, and being able to get there, but like why now?
Great question. So let's go back. For me to answer that question, we got to go way back. Do you remember pen pals? I don't know if you know what pen pals are, right?
Yeah, you actually back wrote in, people letters.
Back in the 80s and 90s, you're writing people. Why did we do that? Why did we write stuff to send to someone? To communicate. Connection.
Yeah. You
said the magic word, connection, right? Email came about. Why were we sending emails to one another? Connection. Right?
Yeah, easier way to do it.
Social media came about. Why do we spend so much time on Facebook? Why do we spend so much time on Instagram? It was all about the connection. Yes, the entertainment piece of it is there, where we could laugh and we could joke and we could all these things, but it's truly about connection. So what is the next level of connection? And that's the metaverse. Only the metaverse could deliver the next connection of next level of connection. And what I mean by that, when you look at something like an Oculus, right? When you're in an Oculus and you're in a room, you're in a world, I'm not only seeing you on the other side of the fence from a phone standpoint or a text message or an email standpoint, but now I'm actually seeing you, whatever your avatar is, right? I'm seeing you, you're beside me, and we could walk together. You're in Brooklyn, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. We could walk together in the metaverse, same place, and we could say, hey, you know what? Let's shoot some ball together. And because there's opportunities where we could shoot basketball, we could play golf. So we're engaging and we're communicating, and we're connecting together in the metaverse. We crave that part of connection as humans. And that's why I believe in it so much, because that's it. Imagine this, right? Imagine when, and this is part of the superhuman piece of it, where it's going to start. Imagine you are where you are, I'm where I'm at, right? And we meet up in the metaverse, and we give each other a pound, right? Or we shake each other's hand. But when we shake each other's hand, you felt what I shook your hand, and I felt your hands as well, right? That connection of touch in the metaverse, right? That's where we're going. That's why I believe in it, because I believe in our next evolution of communication, of connection as humans. We're going to evolve, right? It's not a if, it's a when. And that, and for me, was like, what is that thing that's going to get us closer to that new connection? And yeah, it was the metaverse.
No, I hear you. I guess I just don't know how many, and this is like, I'm in kind of in the Web3 NFT stuff. The metaverse is the one piece for me that I'm not sure that I'm there yet. Like, this is essentially a metaverse, right? We've created our own one-to-one metaverse right now on Zoom as we record this. I don't know what the adoption rate of Oculus is. I know they've dropped their price trying to get more people to use it. And I know you're also trying to get there early. So there's like a whole thing about like first mover advantages. I think that's to me where I'm not there yet in terms of like, is it coming? I think there's so many things that need to get solved first in Web3 before that becomes a big part. But it definitely, like, you're seeing people spending more and more time. And even if you look at the like advent of different game consoles, when you move to the Wii, where now all of a sudden motion's involved and all that stuff. So it's definitely like we're trending there.
So I say two things here, right? So I literally saw someone posted an article, was it yesterday? And it was an article where someone in 2000, not very long ago, right? I mean, in 2000, someone said, hey, the internet is a fad. It was a big news outlet, but a writer saying the internet was a fad 20 years ago. And look where we are right now, right? And just think about technology in general. The computers, when the computer came around, it was big and clunky. I would never have that thing in my house, blah, 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 blah. But everyone has a laptop. Everyone has an iPad, right? The phone, right? So I think technology has to evolve. But think about this as well, right, William? So when we're talking about 1980, the 80s, from the internet to, let's say, the 2000s, right? That's a very long time from the 2000s to now, when we're talking about the evolution of technologies at our fingertips. And I think we're gonna evolve a lot faster, right? So you're saying it's the access point that you're worried about. How many people are gonna get Oculuses? They're so big and clunky right now. But it's just with the internet, with technology, you could probably look at something 10 years ago and be like, wow, that wasn't that thing. But now it's more accessible to everyone. So I believe with the more adoption of it, technology gets smaller. Eventually, if we don't need an Oculus, right? We don't need an actual wear to walk with a headset. We're using contacts. I guess it's going to go from headset to probably eyeglasses to contacts. And that's what we're going to adapt to it. And it could be the next 5 years, it could be the next 10 years, but we're going to adapt and we're going to get there. But because there has to be a next level of connection for humans. It doesn't stop at emails. It doesn't stop at social media at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's the connection, whatever can be deeper and strengthen that. If you start to obfuscate out the technology, I guess. And so when you think about like today, right? So you've already made this, you're as the technology grows, I guess the idea is you'll already understand how this works. So you'll have an advantage, you'll be working with folks. What does that look like? What is a Web3 metaverse strategy look like today?
So I won't give you all the secrets.
Yeah, don't, you don't have to give anything proprietary, but just like, if you're gonna start thinking about this as a brand or an entrepreneur, like how do you at least get started? And maybe it's just education right now, but like, where do you start? Because there's a bunch of metaverses out there, right? There's like Sandbox and Decentraland, exactly. And everyone's got one, right? So
No, great question. So for us, it's, we looked at those four. We looked at Sandbox, Decentraland, Roblox, and Horizon World, Oculus, right? From that standpoint. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more out there as well. But we looked at those four and say, okay, how do we break them down? So we look at Decentraland and Sandbox and say, these are decentralized, right? You can monetize these right away in some capacity, but the adoption rate to get on them is going to be a lot tougher, right? But then when you look at a Roblox that has what, 300 million users, some crazy numbers, right? And then we look at Facebook, right? Don't discount Facebook. Remember, Facebook is the only platform out of everyone else that has access to 2 billion people.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, so I think with real promotion and marketing and adjusting things, they could really increase those numbers of adoption to the technology in itself. So when we look at this, we work it down and say, based on what the client is looking for, do they want to, once again, be decentralized? Do they want to own their own land? Do they want to be able to monetize it right away? Then we know they need to be here. But when they're at sandbox and decentralized land, it comes with certain limitations, yeah. Right? Oh, do they want a more immersive experience? Then they look at Oculus, right? They look at Horizon Worlds. They want something immersive where they could see someone, they could play with someone, they could speak with someone. Then that's where the Oculus comes in. So we're exploring those four different platforms and understanding the underlying technology and how it really connects the whole thing together. But that's just the metaverse, right? Now we're talking about how do we incorporate blockchain? How do we incorporate artificial intelligence, right? And I think what the metaverse and what the blockchain is going to do to artificial intelligence is going to make it more trustworthy in a sense, right? People are going to trust AI more with the blockchain because remember, blockchain was designed for protection, for ownership,
transparency.
And AI was designed more from everything is open, right? From an informational standpoint. But I think when you merge the two together, is where you're going to see the conversion of what a true metaverse could be once you laid it on top. So we're doing a lot of research. So yeah, we're bringing on one-off clients here and there to help them scale. But truly our passion right now is a lot of research in what this thing could really be.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And like when you bring in and you go outside of just like the Web3 world, right, you bring in Roblox, like that actually like has a huge, massive user base and people monetize on it. Like that becomes exactly. Really interesting. And I can see that as an on-ramp because I think that was the point when I was saying, you know, we have our own metaverse here between the Zoom is that we are already living, quote, in a metaverse. It just may not be as immersive as the one that you see on the news or that you hear about being in the future. So that makes a lot more sense.
And then even from an NFT standpoint, right, it's even NFT now where it's the cat image or the monkeys or whatever the case may be. I think those are cool, but that's not how I see NFTs, right? I think those are great to have. How I see NFTs and NFTs, even if you look at Sandbox or even Decentraland, they look at NFTs as just anything that's virtual goods, right? That's what they consider to also to be NFTs, right? Anything that's virtual goods. So when I look at NFTs, I look at how can we could take an NFT and monetize it, right? Inside the metaverse. Whether it's, hey, I just bought a burger and that burger is an actual NFT that I can now take out and now I could go back to Burger King and I could get burgers for free for the rest of the year, whatever, right? So incorporating that connection is what's going to separate everything else. And once again, what I believe with NFTs in the metaverse.
Yeah, that real world utility, right? So it's not just about, and because at the end of the day, yeah, the franchise wants volume, and if they need to make money in physical stores or maybe it's online orders, like it can still be somewhat digital, but it's still usually a physical good. Yes. So the idea that a franchisor is a different conversation, but a franchisee can actually monetize off of some of these digital goods becomes a lot more complex. And that's an interesting way to do it, where you're just buying essentially a coupon or like an experience that gets you this other thing in real life as well.
And even from a franchisor standpoint, it would be a great platform to build business relationships, right? Think about this. You're selling one of your franchises, right? From a franchisor level. And instead of someone trying to figure out flying across the country to go look at it, you could say, hey, meet me in Horizon Worlds. We have our own world in there. And now you could walk around, you could touch things, you can look at things, you can imagine things, you could change buildings around, change colors, and you can now really immerse yourself into presenting your franchise metaverse. You can use it for education. It's a great platform to teach. from immersive standpoint. It's a great platform to learn from an immersive standpoint. Imagine as a student and you're in college and you got on your Oculus or whatever the device is, and you're able to now see 20th century buildings, you'll be able to talk with Cleopatra, whatever, right? So it creates that immersive experience and that connection. I think the next level is going to be when we could touch and feel and our senses enhances within the metaverse.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, Andre. And have you launched anything? Or like, I know you just announced this. This was like a couple. So like, have you started actually working in like in market, like with clients on some of these projects?
So we have a few clients that we're working with. We can't announce them yet, but soon you're going to know. But we do, if you do want to experience something that we have created, if you have the Oculus, we created what we call the Franchise Funverse, right? And it's a truly, really cool experience. It's inside Horizon Worlds. Like you could go in there, you're going to see hot dog football, right? Where when you threw the hot dog through a hoop, through rings, you get a coupon code, right? Just as test. But the idea is that you get a coupon code that says hot dog. You can now take that coupon code, go to Nathan's hot dog and get some type of thing, right? Then we have a burger basketball. Now you could walk around, you could take the burger up and you could throw it into the hoop. Same thing as well. When you throw it in the hoop, you could get like a discount code. We have sushi golf. We have sugar pong. We even have a secret room, right? And imagine this. We say, okay, there's a secret room. And if you find, and this is gamifying the experience, right? If you find a secret room, you're going to unlock an NFT. You're going to unlock this thing. You're going to unlock whatever, right? So we're gamifying it. So if you have an Oculus, or if you know anyone, or anyone that's listening that might have an Oculus, definitely check out Franchise Funverse. I'd love for you to check it out if you do, William, and give me feedback. But that's one of our first brand-owned experience that people could check out. And we're working on a few things with on Sandbox and Decentraland as well. But we're really defining the experience we want people to have in those places.
No, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I wish I had an Oculus or I would try it, but I don't. So I unfortunately will have to watch a YouTube video if you've got one or a demo or something.
So if you go to Metai Block, which is M-E-T-A-I Block, B-L-O-C-K.com, you could see some of the stuff that we do there. But even just understanding technology, one of the things I did first, even as Socially Buzz, is I sent Oculuses to all my employees at the start of the year. Everyone got Oculuses. So now when we're doing our meetings, we're all meeting in our metaverse office. Right. And so that's how you start to adopt technology and understand technology by using it yourself. And then you understand the experience. And then you could, once you understand the experience, you could create those experiences for others.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense, Andre. Yeah. We've been thinking, we've got some things for Ostrich that we've been working on that are NFT related. Okay. And the idea is like, how do you bring people in that creates really meaningful experiences? That's something that they already would do in real life, right? Versus trying to like change behavior, because changing behavior is a challenge, which we know because that's what we do in the personal finance space. So how can we make things as easy from an on-ramp and interest perspective that adds value? So it's really cool. I like, it makes sense, right? People love to play little like games, like instead of playing this on, you know, your phone on the subway or what, like, and I don't know what that looks like in the future. You could just do burger toss instead of whatever the same version of that game is. And you know, I can definitely see, especially if you're getting younger, dip, like whatever that demographic that you're targeting, who would, you know, really like a free burger or a free hot dog.
And even so, let's even talk about Ostrich, right? We could do something very similar where if you're experiencing that from the metaverse standpoint, what are the activations or the things we could do that could lead back to Ostrich and getting clients, getting your user base to sign up or engage with the platform more? So we could create experiences where whether it's a money challenge or finance challenge, or it's just really cool things that we could do to get people excited about it.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. There's some things there that are definitely worth diving into. But before I detract us too much selfishly to my own motivations, Andre, this has been a ton of fun. I'm curious, how do you define success, right? You're one of the very first agency, very first social media agencies, now one of the first, you know, metaverse, AI, blockchain focused agencies. Like, what does success look like to you?
Spending time with my family, my kids, my wife, my parents, whenever I want, right? It's not about how much money I have in the bank, or I know this probably is cliche in a sense, but truly that's how I define success, right? When we didn't have the money, you wanted the most expensive things, right? But now you do have the money, I'm like, no, I don't need to buy that, right? What value does that thing bring to me? If I can't calculate the value of that thing, I'm not getting it, right? But I'll easily say, you know what? Let's go on a family vacation and spend $5,000, $10,000, and it's easy. But oh, you gotta go buy this shoe for $5,000. I'm like, I don't know about that, right? So success for me is being able to spend time when I want, whenever I want, with my family, wife, kids, and so on. So that's success to me.
Love that. Yep. Makes a lot of sense, right? And that's part of the reason why you do what you do, right? Where you have that flexibility.
Exactly. And one of the things that I wanted to build, even before COVID happened, right, with the pandemic, my lease for my office was going to end that year, right? And I wasn't going to renew it. And the reason why is I wanted all my team to work remotely anyways, right? So one of the things I want to do, and kind of go back to success, is I want to spend family vacation 3 months of the year every summer in a different city, in a different country around the world, and give my family, my kids, that type of experience. So that's what success is for me.
I love that. And you're enabling your employees to do the same thing too.
Exactly.
Right? It sounds like, versus exactly, just saying, exactly, I'm gonna go do this. You guys stay in the office.
Exactly.
Awesome. Andre, anything else you wanna leave the audience with, final words, and then please let everyone know how they can connect with you outside of this podcast.
All right, no, awesome. So, three things quickly, and I hope I could run through this quickly. So one of the things that I've learned as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, going through all those multiple businesses, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows, the successes and failures, was there was always three things that made me successful from a technical standpoint, I'll say, right? And it's people, having the right people in place, right? Having the right people on your team, having the right people, whether it's your advisors, whether it's your employees, having the right people, one. The second thing is having the right processes, right? So having processes where A, B, C, D, E, F, G equals this, right? So anyone you could plug in would know A, B, C, D, E, F, G equals this. So having the right processes and having the right technologies, those three things, the people, the processes, and the technology is what saves us hundreds of hours per month, which able to us to do the things we want to do and be successful for our clients. So if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, and you're trying to figure out how do I scale and get to that next level, it's that, having the right people, having the right processes, and having the right tools in place. And for me, if you want to find out, check me out, you could all check us socially, Buzz anywhere. But one thing I would love for everybody to do is I just started, and people are gonna probably laugh, but after 14 years, I just started my own Twitter, right? I had Twitter for my company, for my clients, for everyone else, but I personally never used Twitter on a day-to-day basis, but I just started my own Twitter. So you can find me, Mr. Andre K on Twitter. Come say hi, ask me anything about NFTs, anything about the metaverse, anything about AI or blockchain. I'd be more than happy to share what I know.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Andre. Yeah, Twitter's coming back, especially if you're in the Web3 world. That's the place to be.
Yeah. Nowhere else. If you want to truly understand what's happening in Web3, you have to be on Twitter. There's nowhere else you're going to understand what's truly happening unless it's on Twitter.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this was a ton of fun. Thank you so much for sitting down today.
I appreciate it, William.
On your way out, please share the podcast with others. It's the only way that the community grows and others hear these incredible stories from entrepreneurs and top performers. And of course, pound that subscribe button so you get notified when new episodes drop every Friday. I'm William Glass, CEO and co-founder of Ostrich, and of course, your host of the Silicon Alley Podcast. Have a very profitable day. You got no time to waste, but still you hesitate. Caught in a circle saying, I'll never leave this place. Ooh. Some words got you searching for the bright side.